A lot of debauchery.
Crazy.
Talk
yeah.
to me about. Talk to me about that.
me and Rodney went around the world a couple of times with one extra, and doing what we're doing, and we were both, you know, peaking at that time.
Yeah,
both had big tunes out, and
both on radio. Boom, boom. You know,
craziest story, please. I want the craziest story that you can tell on the podcast right now. Podcast. KillerKellerOfficial.com.
Street Culture TV.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller Podcast.
Towels. Ladies and gentlemen, Killer Keller Podcast, live and direct, Central London, or as central as you need to be, choose to be, you want to be, you don't want to be anywhere else. Big shout out to the sharers and carers, the people that have been supporting us from the jump, keeping you out of trouble we have. So share and tell a friend to tell a friend.
Our sponsors, the mighty GK Nifty Heads, have a massive 100,000 play-to-earn NFTs to give away to the streets. Just hit the link in the description or go to gknifty.com and get ready for HODL Wars Summer 2024.
Inside the house, talking to friends. Oh my goodness, it felt like a long time, but we eventually got him in. He couldn't escape. I pinned him down in a corner of a room and said, "Get in here." In all fairness, this gentleman has had a life of many lives. Lives that has taken him around the globe, albums, upon collaborations, upon Rodney P, upon everybody, and some that is within my phone book and friend circle. He is a producer of the UK hip hop variety and a sound system bang. He goes by the name of Skits. Oh, Daddy Skits!
Good?
Yeah, good.
Yeah, it's taken a while to get here, hasn't it?
Yeah.
We're totally. Finally here. It's good to be in this space. I feel like I know it so well because I've seen so many podcast, man.
Yeah, it's
it feels like home.
Yeah, I like that.
Second home.
That's it. Hey, well, I'll take it, man. I mean, because you're into all forms of rocking, aren't you? You know,
I definitely am, mate. I practice all the elements. Yeah. I always have done, man. Hell, you know,
graph and everything. You know, it's your thing.
Yeah. I was Skits way before. I was Skits the graffiti artist before the hip hop producer.
Really?
And obviously, back in the days, I was a breaker.
Yeah,
I bust the wicked crazy legs. Still can.
Really?
Ask Rodney, I can bust the wicked crazy legs.
That's incredible.
Can't do the hopping windmill no more, but I can still bust the good crazy legs and a one-legged swipe. Still do that, man. Do you know what I mean?
Mate.
Yeah, every element.
This is going to be such a good podcast because you come from an era, and I don't think a lot of people really, they just know you as the producer.
They do, yeah. Yeah, if you know me well, then you know that I used to write graph, and you know that I used to break dance. And if you see me drunk, then you'll know I bust a crazy leg. But yeah, most people know me as the producer or the DJ.
Mm. And one hell of a fucking DJ you are as well, brother. My God.
I don't know. Like, I always thought I was a bit of a shit DJ, really.
Selector.
Yeah, like technically, I've always been a bit shit.
It's not shit.
But you know what? I always had tunes that no one else had. And I was always cutting plates at Music House. You know, I was queuing up with the Jungle guys in 92, 93, cutting plates, by hip-hop plates.
No.
Yeah,
way.
I've got Music House dubs for days.
You can't tell me this, you're a bad boy DJ. Not only for that singular reason, but the way that you have these exclusives, the way that you mix and blend the genres that define the era of hip-hop.
I used to get frustrated hearing hip-hop DJs all playing like, it sounded like they were playing out of the same box. You know, if I heard Anti Up again, I'd be like, oh, man.
Bass drop!
Yeah. And so I used to try and mix up the reggae and the hip-hop because reggae was always a backbone for me, whatever. It was always in the background. And if you get into my car, you hear roots reggae. You don't really hear hip-hop. I put reggae artists on top of hip-hop and I put hip-hop artists on top of reggae and just mix it up a bit and have some specials and one-aways. And when I started producing, I was making tunes and playing them out that night. So,
and then in come Rodney P, the two-headed dynamic duo, the monster.
Like, sound like some Greek monster.
Yeah.
We were talking cheese, wasn't it, me and Rodney? Yeah. He's the rapper. I'm the DJ.
Yeah.
It literally was that.
Yeah,
I'm the little country boy, hippie kid.
Yeah.
He's the little inner city rude boy, and it just, you know, he'd never been to a festival. I'd never been to, like, you know, when I first met Rodney. Destiny hooked us up in the record shop because he had heard my beats and he liked them. Rodney P was a hero of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, from when I was 17, 18. I was listening to London Posse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you know. So,
big up Destiny, by the way.
Yeah, big up Destiny. So when I first went to meet Rodney, I was nervous, man. And I walked in. I remember walking in. He was in Denmark Hill and there was stairs going up and he was lifting weights in the corner and there was some girl in a bikini ran across from one bedroom to the next. And I was like, oh my God, everything they say is true.
But that's, you know, amazing. was this orchestrated? Was this a thing? That's incredible.
All I knew is like, yeah, he lived up to expectations and obviously we just gelled. So yeah. That relationship stood the test of time, really. Chalk and cheese. He's my brother.
Well, we'll get into that a little bit more later. Mm. But for now, let's get into your childhood. So where are you originally from, my bro?
Do you know what? I was born in a windmill in Cambridge.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So my mum and dad were hippies, kind of 60s hippies. They met in Algeria working for a charity and they decided to come back to England and start a hippie commune. So they were looking for old farmhouses. Like, this ain't your average hip-hop story.
Nah.
You know, I'm incredible. A middle-class hippie kid, really. Yeah. That's what I am. Yeah. Like, I grew up on a little farmhouse. There was like five or six families in the middle of Exmoor, in Devon.
In Devon, in Exmoor?
Yeah.
I've got family in Devon, so yeah. I know exactly the
So
track.
Like, you know, my nearest shop was 3 miles away.
Yeah, I get you.
And, but it was a very creative place. And there was a gang of kids running around like Lord of the Flies, you know. And I was one of them little hippie naked kids running naked at festivals. I was one of them.
Really?
You know, when you go to festivals, you see kids like that.
When Glastonbury was really Glastonbury.
Glastonbury was free to get in.
Yeah.
Like, the guy that lived on my commune started the Greenfield. And he used to build solar powered showers. And he was the first one to put the solar powered hot tubs and all that stuff in Greenfield at Glastonbury.
No way.
Yeah.
That's bonkers. My mind went back to the Levellers and bands like that. Yeah. People that were really fundamental in the Glastonbury scene. And
I used to sell black ash to the Levellers.
Did you?
That's a lover story.
Amazing. Listen, this actually follows on from a conversation we had, the serendipity of the Northwest region, so exactly where we are. Fuck it, Kensal Rise, you know exactly where the fuck we are. That we have a mutual friendship and experiences with Naina Cherry, Cameron McVeigh, such.
Yeah.
You seem to be like this social butterfly of the culture.
I don't know how I really did that. Like, I was just always in the right place and I was always out and about, so I just met everyone. Even when, you know, I used to, from Devon, that's when I got into hip-hop. I was the only hip-hop kid in the village. Like, I was walking down Barnstable High Street, which is like where I grew up, nearest big town, with my lino and my ghetto blaster and my deerstalker hat and my gazelles. Like, and all my mates were like skinheads or gothics. And like, I was the hip-hop kid. Wow. And I don't know why, really. Like, I discovered electro and I went to Freestyle 85.
Game changer, right?
Game changer.
Wow.
So I remember I had a yellow Pringle jumper on and I was 15. Like, you know, and I'd been listening to a bit of electro and I was kind of feeling it. But my mate's dad was a photographer and he was going up there. So we just went. And there I saw proper MCs, proper DJs, proper breakers, proper graphics.
That you'd never, because you'd always been on your own up until that point.
I would kind of, I'd been on my own. But I'd listen to John Peel and tape the hip hop tracks. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. But after that, I saw Imperial Mixers and I saw proper DJs, Daddy Speedo on the mic.
Big up Speedo.
And Chrome Angels doing graph.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and that was my big introduction, really. Like, that's where I saw it all in one place. And I embraced all the elements and I wanted to do everything.
I
went home. I didn't have no decks, but I had pause button mixes that I would do. I had 3 hi-fi sets, shitty old tape decks, all set up, cassettes all laid out, bits of Fat Boys, bits of Curtis Blow, bits of Martin Luther King speeches, over just instrumentals, and I'd bust them all in and play. I hadn't got any of them left, but
wow,
man, I used to do that for days. And then I bought my first pair of decks for £25 each, which were just, you know, belt drive shit.
Mm.
Like, but I had to build the boxes for them, and they're just the top bits. Mm. My mixer didn't even have a crossfader. It was like a balance side to side. Man, that's how I started. And I just carried on going. And yeah, I fell in love. I realised that I couldn't do everything. I was a pretty good breaker at one point. But I realised that DJing and music production was where, like, that was my strength.
It was a calling almost.
Well,
you you ever rap though?
Not really, no. No. So rapping was like, I could always write lyrics, but I never liked the sound of my voice. I always thought my voice was a bit too nasal. And yeah, I didn't like it. I always thought other people sounded better. I knew I wasn't good enough to be a rapper. Mm-hmm. So I never really practiced that art. That's probably the one element I didn't really ever advance in.
Yeah. It's funny that.
But Graff, I was running around doing pieces everywhere, going up to Bristol, staying with my people. You know, we did quite a few big pieces in Bristol back in the days. And Bristol was honing me at that time because I was going to the Moon Club and Tropics Club with people I knew in Bristol.
Big reggae sound there as well.
Smith and Mighty honed me, man. That's where I fell in love with bass music. Reggae music was always my love anyway.
Yeah.
But I'd see Wild Bunch underneath Temple Mead Station. And I'd be running around, you know, smoking a lot of weed, skateboarding, and just going to all these clubs and meeting a lot of people. DJ Milo was a massive inspiration for me.
Yeah.
Just because he used to play across the board and he was such a good mixer.
I swear to God, man.
But Bristol, I fell in love with the bass.
When you talk, I get flashbacks of eras that I wasn't even in. Like, I just think of, like, I think of, it's a real nostalgic place, man. And to be Skits, I mean, you would literally a butterfly. You were just flying around Bristol, London,
Well, the thing is, the first hip-hop moments were in Bristol, and then I moved to Brighton. When I was 17, I moved to Brighton, and my mate had a flat in Brighton, and I was DJing and working in a record shop and just selling weed and just living the life.
Wow.
Like, and then Brighton got too small. Like, I was doing parties with Fatboy Slim and Midfield General and all them people that were big in Brighton, and I got to a point where I was like, I need to be in where the hip-hop is.
Yeah.
I came to London.
And that's
so
where
I moved to Brixton, and then, yeah, I never looked back on the production side of things, and, you know, I was hanging out at all the hip-hop clubs. It was probably where I met you.
Yeah.
And I met everyone on the scene at that time, and that's where I put Countryman together.
And all hail Countryman, the album, wow. It was almost like the A to Z of sound and, you know, MCs. I was
lucky, man. It was a lucky time. It was timing. It was just lucky. I just picked out some people that I've been hanging out with in clubs and put them on a record.
Yeah, but...
And I had Ronin as the backing because they mixed and mastered my tunes well.
Yeah, they really did.
The engineering, we didn't cut corners, and I think that's what made that album stand out.
Yeah.
It sounded big.
You did one with Dynamite, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the one. That was what I was thinking.
We make a mate.
Noise. I never
used to play that until I heard the Scratch Perverts playing it, actually.
Really? Well, and then it was like, yeah, okay, I'll go.
And I was like, okay, that actually sounds all right. I'm not very good at playing my own tunes.
Where my mind is at, 100%, that was the introduction to me discovering Skits.
That was my first tune, really.
That
first
was
big tune.
It.
Yeah.
The way that chord progression happens as well. And I never heard anything like Roots Maneuver back then. Nothing really compared to it.
I mean, I just told this story recently, but that was such a lucky break. Yeah. I was living in White City with two girls in a block of flats. And I was making beats all day long. So Becky, one of the girls, she was like, oh, you should meet my boyfriend. He's a rapper. And I was like, and it was Rodney Roots.
Just on a random.
On a random. And I gave him a little beat tape. He chose a couple of beats. But that beat actually... I moved and I was living in Hackney after White City.
Yeah.
And I used to live opposite Glissol Park. And Giles Peterson lived the other side, Brownswood Road.
Mm.
And I used to see him all the time. We had mutual friends. And he used to let me go down to his basement and just dig through tunes. And I happened to pick out that Jean-Luc Ponty track and sampled it, not knowing that it was a jazz funk classic for Where My Mind Is At.
Mm.
And all the jazz buffs picked up on that. And so that tune crossed over to the jazz hip-hop world as well as being big on the hip-hop scene. So that really helped me and Rodney back in the day. That was a good boost for both of us.
Ronin was a beast. Wasn't it Shazer that did the artwork for Ronin?
Shazer did my artwork.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Big up Charlie.
Well, yeah, bad man.
Yeah.
And it's just so it's ironic that, you know, he was working in a record store. He ended up coming on podcast, actually, to be fair. Or the WD lot, do you know what I mean? Like, but he was... The look of the album was so important, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And I didn't cut corners on anything.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the manufacturing, the artwork. She Won did the lettering on the front of it. And I had, you know, I was friends with all the graph artists. Charlie was part of my crew. I mean, me and Charlie did a whole campaign for Galliano, where we did like 7 pieces all around London.
What?
Yeah, with Snatch. So it was me, Charlie Snatch.
Wow.
Did all these, like, yeah. And we did a lot of work together. I was never as good as Charlie or Snatch or Theo. Like.
Hey, no way, bruv. Like, when you, but you're, you know, you're standing with Giants. Big up Snatch, wow. Another, you know, musical, transferable skill set kind of guy.
But I've always, like, I've loved, Graff has been a massive thing in my life. Yeah. And I love Graff. Like, some of my, you know, Inky from Bristol.
Oh,
like, I know so well now. Mao Mao is, like, my brother now. Like, he's my oldest friend.
Yeah.
And he's blowing up now. He's just put out a book. It's amazing. And it's just really nice to see everyone from back in the day coming through now. Whatever element you practiced then, and now you're teaching it.
Now
you're a dance teacher, or now you're a music instructor, or now you're making money from the DJ or the artwork somehow.
It's true.
And hip-hop just spawned all these creative people, man.
Yeah, it's true. The element of Graff, I think Tizer called it the football hooligans of hip hop. I'm not with that. That sounds all right. And there are
half of them were football hooligans. That's all right.
That's true.
Big up Jackson.
Yeah. Yeah, and Syme. Hold on. I'll say this much: it's everything within hip hop is in balance.
Mm.
Everything is balanced, and that's what makes the more aggressive side so appealing. It's like making this. You make the soundtrack for these guys.
Yeah.
So you've got to have some kind of idea about what
of course
sensibilities are.
Yeah, and the whole thing about hip-hop is putting that reality onto the record. Sometimes I wish I was a lyricist because I would want to put it on, but other people did it so well. Roots Maneuver fucking was amazing. Like he blew my mind with his beat making, and I learned so much just leaning over his shoulder watching how he made a beat.
Mm. Talk to me about the production process for you.
For me, it varies really. Usually, I mean, back in the days, it was always finding a sample first. And the sample, it was sample-led. And it was pretty basic, cut and paste, man. I found some drums that I liked. I chopped them up. I put them with, you know, I'd always like... Back in the days, it used to be a folk sample, a reggae bass line and hip-hop drums. That was my formula almost. That's what created my sound. There was always... I always wanted a massive bass line. That was the backbone. For the tune, always.
Just goes back to the reggae influence.
Yeah, and I always felt that there wasn't enough bottom end in a lot of UK hip hop. I still think that today, actually, apart from the new stuff.
It's true, but like I said to you earlier, you know, tunes like Dedicated and Where My Mind Is At, and you know, just there's just such a seismic difference in sound when you put them up against not just UK hip hop, but it's. That music of that time, and that's why it's still...
I think Ronin were a big part of that. They taught me to spend time on the mixing and the mastering. We didn't cut corners. We spent a lot of time.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't spending 2 weeks on a snare drum, but it was almost a bit like that.
Really?
You know, I watch kids today making music, and it's all so quick.
Yeah.
You know, they turn around a tune,
shoot
the YouTube video, get it up on Spotify all in one day.
How do you feel about that?
I've been inspired by it, actually, because I teach a lot of kids. They're all into drill. Like all they're doing is drill at the moment. So, but it inspires me a little bit, and I think I'm being really long, man, with some of the stuff I'm spending a week mixing a track. Like, come on, sort your shit out, get it done quicker.
Yeah, I think we all hold.
But I was just stuck in my old school ways.
Mm.
So yeah, I think it's inspiring what the kids are doing. Love it.
What was the last album you did? I mean, was it Countryman? Was the kind of more seminal?
Countryman came out in 2001. Styxman came out in 2011.
There you go.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're consistent enough for your audience?
No, I could be doing a lot more. I mean, Leaf Dog's done 4 albums since January the 1st.
Yeah.
Or is it 5?
Yeah, big up Leaf Dog. he's collaborating everything.
I speak to Leaf, and, you know, I watch people like Farmer churning them out, and I'm like, but my life's been hectic. My life and living gets in the way of my beat making. And I go through spells where I just don't even want to make beats. Priorities aren't always beat making. And I can't churn them out like they do. Like, I tailor make beats for people. Or I make a beat and I have someone in mind. You know, Farmer, I'm sure he does 4 or 5 beats a day.
Yeah,
I don't do that.
Yeah,
occasionally, I might make 2 in a day. But they both probably be shit. So, you know, I'm really picky. I take time.
That's the way it should be. But there's also the live aspect as well, which you know, again, in each equal measure, you're out doing it. Still, the music you created still holds true to people wanting to go and see it, right?
I always wanted to make music that would work in a club. Rather than, I mean, I do make music to listen to when you're on your skateboard or on your tube or whatever. But most of the time I wanted a big bouncy tune to play in the club. Saying that, I don't really play my own tunes out. There's only probably one or two tunes I play, which is weird. Yeah. And everyone always says, play your own tunes. I'm like, I don't like to. Yeah. I don't know why. I play Born in the System, the Bugsy track.
Really?
Yeah, I don't really play them.
What about if Rodney's there? You don't do Dedicated?
Well, me and Rodney, we'll do a stage show, so we'll do all our tunes. Yeah, that's different. But if I'm doing a DJ set, I don't really play any of my tunes.
Really?
Yeah.
That's curious.
Yeah,
you guys toured a lot of debauchery.
Crazy.
Talk to me about that.
me and Rodney went around the world a couple of times with One Extra and doing what we're doing, and we were both, you know, peaking at that time.
Yeah.
Both had big tunes out and
both on radio, boom, boom, you know.
And we were just going here, there, and everywhere. We were DJing every Friday, Saturday, every week for years, really.
Yeah.
We were putting in rap miles, mate, in my little Golf.
Really?
We had drivers driving us sometimes. And it was sex, drugs and rock and roll. It was, you know, I'm not going to lie. Yeah. I can't tell you any.
Because you can't remember anything.
I can remember a few. But, you know, we had a getaway driver driving us at one point. Really? And 120 on the hard shoulder when there was traffic.
Really? Just
to get to the venues. And we do 3 in one night.
Really?
I mean, there's crazy footage of us that I know is going to appear at some point.
Really? Of what?
Of us just being out and about and doing stuff. That's this footage.
Have you got footage or someone you know got the footage?
Someone I know has got footage who used to document our travels.
And do you get along?
Big up Shepherd's Pie.
And do you guys get on?
Yeah, we do.
Okay, so this will surface.
That'll surface at some point.
Organically and in a respectable way.
We did a lot and we always hung out with the people. That's why I think we always got the return bookings.
Yeah. Because you hung out with the people at the end and it was a vibe.
At the end, you know, we were never into doing the show and heading straight back to the hotel. We'd go back to the after party at some random kid's house
and be
doing whatever they were doing and just
craziest
having fun.
Story, please. I want the craziest story that you can tell on the podcast right now. Come on, I'll do it with the graph writers. We can do it with the producers. Come on, there's a story to tell.
I'll tell you what, it's no sex and no drugs and no rock and roll in this story, but it's quite a crazy story.
Okay, go.
So we were in Kampala. It's in Uganda.
Okay.
I sound like a fast show.
No, as you do. Yeah.
But we were working, doing some workshops out there, and we had a show. And downtown Kampala is pretty hectic.
Mm-hmm.
There's only a few travel. Anyway, there was a big traffic jam. There was a big accident downtown. And the promoter rings us and he's like, "We're not going to be able to get you to this gig on time because you have to go through the downtown area. The only way we can get you there is if we bribe an ambulance driver to come get you." So he goes, "But you're going to have to strap in. He's going to get you there on time, but you're going to have to strap in." So me and Rodney are like, "Yeah, we're up for this. You know, we don't mind a bit of danger." Ambulance driver comes, we strap in. And I've never had such a hairy journey, but it was amazing, but so amazing, I don't know why I didn't film it. But we were shooting through the back streets of Kampala, kids, chickens, mud huts going everywhere. He got us to the gig early. He got us to the gig early.
Wow, that's crazy.
Through the streets. The best driver I think I've ever had in my life.
It's like the shanty Italian job at the end of the
year. It literally was. It was hilarious. And just pretty mad. I mean, I've got loads of mad stories. Most of them sexual debauchery and hedonism. Really? And the most fun I ever have is like in a little seedy basement with 200 people with a condensation dripping off the walls.
With a touch of carnal knowledge.
I mean, me and Rodney have been to a lot of parties. We've been with a lot of people. We've been to a lot of, you know, 50 Cent's party in Mayfair with naked swimmers in the pool.
Really?
Like, you know, crazy shit but they're boring. Like, you know, I'd much rather be in a warehouse party in East London.
So that's a 2 out of 10, right? It's like the dial doesn't go past 13. Yeah. Yes, it does.
You know, it's like we've supported Jay-Z in front of 40,000 people, but fucking boring as shit gig, man. I'd rather be
vacuous.
I'd rather be in some little club in Bristol playing to 200 people.
Yeah. I think that I think that speaks for everyone.
We've always been about a vibe.
Yeah.
Always been about a vibe. I've always been about a vibe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Take the gig of 200 overtaking, you know, God knows what.
Every time.
It's never fun, is it, really?
The big gigs aren't fun. No. And we've supported so many American artists over the years.
Yeah.
And the sound's always shit, and then they turn it up for the main act, which is always frustrating.
Yeah, yeah. What's that
and
about?
The thing is, everyone's just waiting for the main act, and it doesn't really feel like...
That's so true as well. Mm. I mean, yeah.
It was so frustrating as an artist to go on and know that your sound's just not being pushed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the main acts come on, and they pump it right up, and you can really feel it in your ribcage.
Yeah.
The music we listen to needs to be felt in your ribcage.
Yeah.
It
it's true.
Just does.
Yeah, it's true. This is all of the time that was combined with one extra and such. I would say Destruction from Lethal Destruction, Bad Boy producer. Yeah. I'd also put Vadim in the mix, Mark B. These were people of your era.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Were these people that you would kind of curate, conversate and work
I knew
on?
Them all. The creators, Mark B. Everyone knew everyone, and we'd all come up together, so there was a mutual respect there.
Who was your favourites? Who were the people that you...
Roots Maneuver.
All day, yeah.
Roots Maneuver as a producer, because he was just different to everyone. He didn't follow any template, and I just loved his drums.
Yeah.
Like, the swing on his drums was crazy.
Yeah, yeah, it was, yeah.
Like...
How's that work, yeah?
Yeah, he'd make a beat in 2 minutes that I was like... Do that if I was sitting there all day.
Help me out, yeah. Well, yeah, but and also when you've got somebody that is attuned to his own vocals,
he's a one man army.
Yeah.
I toured with Rodney, so me and him, Rodney Roots, we did gigs to nobody. Like, me and Roots Maneuver in a skateboard shop in Reykjavik, DJing to mothers buying tracksuits for their kids.
Really?
No one there.
Predating any Big,
like,
Dada, boom.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. That was after Where My Mind Is At.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there debauchery with Roots Maneuver in the same level of... as
no.
Rod? No, there really wasn't, right?
No.
I couldn't imagine that.
No. we had fun.
Yeah.
We had fun.
Favourite producers then in that case? Who were the people that influenced you the most?
Oh, God.
Yeah. It's actually quite a complex one. Give me four.
Chimpo.
Ooh, yeah.
DJ Dai, my brother.
Nice. Yeah, Dai.
I have to say Premier, just because.
Yeah, be rude not to.
Done. Yeah. Yeah.
That's three now. Is it three?
Quincy Jones.
Quincy.
I mean, I listen to all kinds of music, and I get inspiration from all genres. Yeah.
What's the tune you wish you'd made that you didn't make?
Oh, you really put me on the spot, aren't you? Production-wise.
Yeah.
What's the difference? Dr. Dre.
Really?
Yeah, I love that beat. That beat's so sick.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Ah. Genre you wish you'd kind of dabbled a little bit more in?
I've never made a jungle track. Never made a drum and bass track.
It's curious, isn't it? Because
I've always played jungle. I mean, before I was on One Extra, and I had tunes out, I was playing jungle.
Mm.
You know, I was. I used to do nights with Jerry Dammers at the Jazz Bistro in Farringdon for years. Me and him promoted clubs in Brixton. We were doing Loughborough Junction. We did a lot down there. We did a night called The Jam. We did a night called Freeform. The Dog Star for years.
Yo, I remember that.
Yeah. So that was me and Jerry Dammers. And we used to take you on a journey. So we start with jazz, then we go into hip hop, and then we go to jungle.
Fuck.
Because we used to have Ollie that used to run a little record shop in Piccadilly. Can't remember the name of the record shop. But he used to play jazz. Then I'd come on and play hip hop, and a bit of hip hop reggae, and jungle. And Jerry would do the same.
I just find it so... It's
bizarre because he was one of my heroes as well.
It's
bizarre how I've ended up working with my heroes.
Yes, and it's bizarre how you even get yourself into these positions.
I don't know how I did, really. I don't know what it is, because it's not like I've got the gift of the gab or I slide in and lick people's asses. I don't do that.
But you're more... this is why you're on the podcast for me personally, is that, aside from mate, you're more than just a producer, you're more than just a DJ. You're actually just like...
I like bringing people together.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the things that I like to do.
You've done so much.
Someone from here to there and bring them together. Like-minded people, come together, man. It's important.
You've done so much.
I don't think I've done that much, really. But I have done a few things, but I haven't done that much.
I'm talking from a scene point of view.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe. I don't think any more than anyone else has, really.
I think it's your connectivity.
I do like connecting people. I think it's important. It's lovely to link a graph artist with another graph artist or you know, get someone to make a soundtrack for someone that you know that's doing a film. Mm. Or, like, you know, that's a good feeling.
Mm.
It's basically just sorting your mates out.
Yeah.
I love sorting my mates out.
Yeah.
And I love to see my mates go far, and I love to see my people come through. There's nothing better.
Yeah.
That's why I always like to bring new kids through as well.
It's
I remember when
thing.
I brought Bugsy through, no one had heard of him, and they were like, fuck, who is this kid from Bristol? Yeah. That spits faster than anyone.
Yeah.
Like, still to this day, no one can touch Bugs. And that's why I'm working with my godson now, who I've been honing since day one, Joe Byrne.
Fucking crazy.
Yeah.
So it's all going back full circle to...
Full circle, man. Yeah.
Your health is part of the reason why you're in London at the moment.
Yeah, after this, I've got to go straight to get an MRI on my heart. You know, I had to die to start living.
Talk to me about...
So in November, I mean, people know I died.
Yeah. But let's get into it real quickly for those that only watch Killer Keller podcast. Good fucking luck. Good right on you as well.
So it was November the 6th, 2022. And I hadn't even been on a mad one. Everyone's like, oh, Skits, were you on a mad one? You mean Kane in it? No, I hadn't really. I think the night before I'd maybe had a lion and a bottle of cider. Mm-hmm. And I'd gone to bed. And the next morning I woke up, I was feeling a bit sick and I was throwing up. And then I can't really remember no more.
Really?
But basically I stopped breathing. And I had a cardiac arrest. And my girlfriend pulled me from the bed. She realised I wasn't breathing. She rang 999. And the operator talked her through. And she gave me CPR for 15 minutes my heart stopped for.
What?
And she kept the oxygen going to my brain that whole time. So the T-shirt SD, thank you.
Salute.
Yeah. Basically, I had a cardiac arrest, and they brought me back to life with proper Pulp Fiction style.
Really? Really?
Adrenaline and shock.
Well, look, if you're going to do it, right?
But I don't remember any of it, and everyone's like, Skids, what did you see? What's the other side like? Did you come back with any... Did you see the light? Did you meet your ancestors? I didn't see anything, and really? I don't remember anything.
That's a bit...
I know,
yeah.
But the one thing, man.
The one thing I came
out of it not fearing death. Like, weirdly, like, I'm not scared to die now.
Really?
And I feel like no one should be scared of dying. Like, it's cool, you're going to be all right.
I think it's more the fear of missing out.
Yeah, I didn't want to miss out. Yeah. My time was not done. Yeah. I had tunes to make, I've got people to meet, I've got adventures still to have.
Podcasts to do and shit like that.
But it made me realise, stop wasting your time, man.
Yeah.
And so since then, I haven't done a line of coke, or I haven't done any drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you recommend not doing it? And this isn't a public service announcement. It's more... If you'd known what you know now, later on in years, would you have kind of...
Yeah, I mean, I was always crazy excessive, like, in whatever I did.
Yeah.
Ask anyone around me.
Yeah.
Whatever I did, I would do more than anyone else. And I would just keep going and keep going. And I think that all just caught up with me. And my buddy just said, nah, hell no. Like, you can't carry on like this. And they really don't know why I had a cardiac arrest, but all they can put it down to is that rock and roll lifestyle.
Really?
Yeah.
That's the only...
That's the only thing. They've checked me over. This is why I'm going for an MRI today, because I've had some mini heart attacks since then. So, and they're saying they don't really know what's causing them. They don't know what's wrong with me. Cardiologists are a bit flummoxed
about it. Yeah. So how do you know when you got a cardiac arrest on the way?
Well, no, I get these kind of angina twinges. Okay. So they've given me this angina spray that I spray under my tongue if I get any symptoms.
Yeah.
Which seems to be working. I'm not sure if I don't spray, what's going to happen. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it just seems a little volatile.
But it's a little bit weird. I feel like, you know, I'm blessed to be here, man.
Yeah.
I'm really, really lucky to be here. Like, you know, I'm a single dad.
Yeah.
You know, my girlfriend died in my arms 7 years ago.
Wow.
So my son's mum. So that, I was like, I can't die yet. I've got to be around for him. I've got to see him through.
Wow.
I've been, and he's had open heart surgery 2 years after his mum died.
How did your missus pass away?
She had a brain hemorrhage while we were on holiday in Turkey.
Oh my God.
I know. So she was an agent for, she used to work for Mickey Finn.
Really?
Yeah, she, Urban Takeover.
Yeah.
Tash. Yeah. Wow. So I met a lot of jungle people through her, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, like when you put it like
but
that.
But yeah, I need to be around for my son.
Yeah.
And when people say, Skits, why haven't you done your next album? Because I've been, you know, looking after my son. And after she passed, I spent a year curled up on the sofa watching box sets of Scandal and not really.
Yeah.
But my son kept me going, really. Because I could have easily gone off the rails and wandered in the desert.
Yeah.
And drinking drugs could have. But he kept me focused and he kept me grounded. I had to wake up every day, make his packed lunch, get him to school, get him back. I mean, the hardest thing I ever had to do in my life was tell him that his mum wasn't coming home. And, you know, that was deep. And I wouldn't wish what I went through on my worst enemy.
Really?
Yeah.
A life for little lives, and when you
have... Yeah, I didn't think I'd get my life back together, really. I just thought my life was over, but about a year after, I kind of just pulled myself out of it and just, you know, I had good friends and I had good family around me and they just showed me love and brought me through it. And I met Letitia, I'd known for ages, and got with her, and now we're still together. And yeah, she's been amazing. She's been a rock.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And kept your life.
And saved my life, which she reminds me about every single day.
Yeah. Should we go out tonight, babe? There's a couple of tokens here.
But, you know, it does make you think about life and put things in perspective and think what you want out of your life. And, yeah, the drugs had to go, man.
Yeah.
The drugs had to go and the debauchery and everything. You know, I can still go out and I've realised how much tighter I am as a DJ when I'm not fucking off my face.
Yeah.
It's nice to be playing straight, actually. Do you know what I mean?
Do you know what's mad though is that again it takes a, and we're all like this, all susceptible to the moment where you're forced to stop, and the adjustments and stuff, and you know, the earlier the better. It's so funny the human mind that you think you're the best whatever on drink.
You just think you're invincible and it's never going to end, you know. And when I think back, you know, I wasn't eating properly. Yeah. I wasn't looking after myself and I wasn't treating the people around me that well, man.
Yeah.
I was probably being really selfish, like coked up, selfish little idiot for a few years. You know what I mean?
Sort of. I mean...
No, I definitely was. You know, I've apologised to people and I need to apologise to a few more still, probably.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? What come on, more closely family related or
just things that I didn't do or things that I did. You know, I won't go into details, but obviously, and you're just missing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the money I spent, man, like fucking hell. Could have bought a house.
There must have been a lot of money. That must have been a lot of money.
But you know, I don't regret it really because it's made me who I am.
Yeah.
You know, I'm here and I've got some stories, good stories. I'll tell the grandchildren.
That's it, yeah.
But I want to be around for my grandchildren.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Do you think that the lifestyle that that you adopted, obviously it's music and success driven, but if your family were, you know, they grew up in that brought you up the way they did, do you think some of that
freedom...
definitely
rubbed off, man.
Yeah.
My family's been my rock.
Yeah.
And they've always supported me in whatever I did.
But the freedom...
The freedom and the creativity and the independence, you know, when I was 17, I travelled around America by myself and my girlfriend, man. Like, I was 17. Like,
wow.
You know, I can't really see kids doing that now so much.
No, at all.
I was running out of money in Seattle and knocking on people's doors and saying, have you got any work? And that's, you know, going...
Yo.
It's mad. Like, when I look back, I was pretty independent always, and I was always a traveller. My mum and dad took me around North Africa in a VW bus when I was 10. And, yeah, I was just... I love travelling, man. I still do love travelling.
Did anything ever scare you when you were out on your travels? Was there anything like, whoa, you know, near death or anything mad?
No, I've had a few moments. Scorpion on my bed scared the fuck out of me.
Whoa, that's fucking scared enough.
I've definitely had a few moments. It's been scary. A few, you know... getting a taxi in crazy places and being lost in places, you know. But I quite enjoy the buzz of getting lost in a crazy town and trying to find your way back. And I'll always find my way to the underground spots and that's where I enjoy, that's where I catch a vibe.
I feel you. Like, you drop me off anywhere in the world, I find my way back. You drop a fucking dishwasher in the house, I'm fucked. Do you know what I mean? It's like, what the fuck's this thing? Do you know what I mean? It's part of the international man of mystery that I think skits hold.
I just, I do love to take a risk, and I do love a bit of danger.
Yeah.
You know.
Now that's that rock and roll thing again, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I've done, you know, me and Rodney did a bungee jump off Auckland Harbour Bridge.
What?
That was kind of crazy. We had a big interview with a rap show just before we did the bungee jump, and we couldn't talk about anything because we were so worried about the bungee jump. But actually, that was pretty scary.
That was a great conversation on radio, right?
It was so rubbish. But, you know, when we went to New Zealand, we had Maori welcome, a proper traditional Maori welcome.
Really?
And they took us to, like, meet the ancestors up at the graveyard. Like, crazy. We did a lot.
The snapshots in the mind that you must hold. It's just too much.
Yeah, I've forgotten. Some of them, it's all a bit hazy.
That's why you have someone like Rodney with you, because it's
Rodney's worse than me. His memory's worse than
me. Sometimes people say to me, do you remember we did that? I was like, no, but it sounds good. Like, what happened there? You know, because you just forget things, don't you? Do you think that's a symptom of always thinking forward and never looking back?
No, I think it's just doing too many drugs.
Really?
Just
all way too much.
Yeah.
Hedonism.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy. See, I never saw enough of that with skits, right? Do you know what I mean? I'm sort of man of myth on stage, DJing and on, and...
Yeah, you know, I mean...
Folklore.
When I lost the job at One Extra, I was a driver for the Scratch Burbets, and that was pretty...
Oh, my God.
Crazy times. We got all the Scratch
Burbets. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, I think I was the best driver they've ever had.
Yeah. Yeah, income, Tony and Joel. Here we go. I mean, that must have been one hell of. See, it's just other moments in your career that.
Yeah, it did seem to go from one thing to another. That's what my life has been like, little snapshots.
Yeah.
One thing leading on to the next, but all intertwined as well.
Yeah, that's why I think it's been quite hard to kind of navigate a conversation like this, because they all merge and mesh, and albums. Collaborations live, you know, being in one place but doing another at the same time. That's really what you're, and that's why I say interconnected, you're socially connected within the scene. It's really hard to kind of...
I think I was just out and about, so I just met everyone
When
I did Countryman, and since then I just knew everyone from doing the radio.
Yeah.
And, you know, I knew people from queuing up at Music House, cutting dub plates. I knew people just from being on night buses with my record boxes. Yeah. And I knew people from skate parks, from skating. I knew people from Graf, and I knew people from DJing. So, I just...
Do you think that's like a moral code of conduct that you hold to the scene? Is that because there's some core principles within your actions and what you've done. You've been very true to the scene.
I think it's important to say something, and I think it's important to keep positive, and I think it's important to bring new people through and educate them on the foundations, man.
Yeah.
I think it's really important to embrace... I mean, I see a lot of MCs coming out and they're not ready to come out. I see too many people grab the mic and they're not ready. They haven't got the flow, they haven't got the content, they haven't got they can't even sit on top of the rhythm properly. You know, do your work, earn your stripes. And, you know, when I see people go straight to a live stage show, they can't hold the crowd.
Yeah.
Rodney can hold the crowd after 10 tequilas because he's a professional.
Yeah.
You see... I mean, I think it's important to do your work, and I think it's important to learn your art. And I think too many people don't learn the art properly, and they just want pot noodle wrap. They just want to add hot water and it's all ready. And it's not like that. You have to put the work in to get good, to be good.
Yeah.
I still feel like I'm, you know, my music tech, I'm so untechie. Like, I know what I know, and I have people helping me out on the engineering side, because I'm still, like, I'm basic. Like, I see other people mixing and producing, I'm like, fuck, I know nothing. I see people talking about music and I'm like, I know nothing.
But do you need to know? Because you've got...
I don't think so. I think if you know what you want, you can get things...
Yeah.
I know I want my snare to sound like this. I can usually do that, but if I need someone to help me, I can get them to help.
It's the frequency you're looking
for. I think
for.
It's knowing, you know, as a DJ as well, you know, it was always the selection rather than the technical skill for me. You know, I was like a bashment DJ that played hip hop.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, my scratching skills were too good yeah. in. That was it.
But people don't want much tune. More than that when they're jamming.
No,
it's
of course.
This...
Yeah. And I used to get bored watching DJs that didn't look like they had a good time. I'm always having a good time when I'm DJing. You see me, I'm into the tunes. Yeah, I'm bouncing around.
Yeah.
I'm having fun. You have to have fun.
Yeah,
watching a DJ that looks bored is the worst thing in the world for me.
But it's reciprocated, because if people feel you're feeling it, then they're going to feel it.
Yeah,
simple as that. Yeah. We'll have to get you down to the club night, man.
I'll come down.
That's the one. Yeah. What's the future, my brother?
Future, man.
Apart from going to the hospital in about an hour.
The future for me is creating some memories, man.
Yeah.
For me and my loved ones, and embrace, like, keeping my family good, sorting my family out, making sure my son gets to adulthood and is sorted before I die.
Yeah.
I want to make some good music, but, you know, that's not a priority for me.
Yeah.
My priority is, you know, having a good time while I'm here and just survival.
Yeah.
Survival.
Survival. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
And just loving the people that I love and just enjoying my life. It's kind of hard right now because Babylon is stepping on a lot of people and... fucking hell, it's hard.
Yeah,
the bills and the food and like making a living out of music ain't easy.
Impossible.
I'm still up scaffolding and painting and decorating and doing what I need to do to survive sometimes. You know, it's not like people think I'm rolling, but
I feel you, bruv. Like,
our generation of hip hop kids, we didn't make money like they are now. And most of us have still got day jobs. But as far as the future, man, I mean, I'm still putting out music on Drag and Drop, my label. Mostly my stuff, but I've got Joe Byrne, who's my godson, whose album's about to drop. We've done a load of singles already. So he's the future for me, because he can ride any rhythm. So I need to just big him up, because he is talking about the future. He grew up listening to me, and his dad plays reggae and I play hip hop, and he can ride that and jungle, and he's Mr. Versatile, but he's got a style and he's got a flow and he's got a pattern. He's bad. If I say so.
Flying the flag.
So I'm always looking for good music, any new music. So I'm always looking for MCs, and I'm trying to make some new beats.
Crazy. Still on it, man.
New beats.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if I'm working, stacking shelves or whatever I'm doing, I'm still going to be making beats, man. It's in the blood, isn't it?
Brother. Man.
There's loads we haven't touched on.
Yeah, but honestly, like, the boxes that we've ticked on this one podcast, it's actually uncanny, because there's some guests that come in that actually hold the key to a number of fault lines.
Right.
Yeah, you're that guy. It answers questions and relays and connects other podcasts. It's all one big timeline.
It is. Yeah. You're connecting big time, bro. Connecting everyone.
It's working, man. And to have guests like you on, where we can chop it up. Have a giggle.
Yeah.
Been a pleasure, man. Thank you so much. Daddy's kids in the building. Come on, cuzzy. Yo, we've seen the fucking first rodeo we do. We do it every single week. Killer Keller podcast, Allah In Was Out of Fashion, yeah? Crime don't pay, but neither do they, yeah? You take care of yourselves. Don't talk to one, or I wouldn't. Be lucky, people. Easy.
Nice.
Great.